And now I would like to introduce our main speaker for this evening, Guy from San Diego.
I'm Guy, I'm alcoholic. Well, I'll thank this meeting because having to speak up here made me do a little bit of work on myself in AA, hit a couple more meetings than normal, did a couple more steps than I normally do, hit two meetings today, one at 5:30 tonight, the OB Alano Club, to hear as much as I possibly could, and even listened to an old-time friend last night, Jack Brennan, at home, and brought back those old memories from early sobriety. And I heard also this week at one of those meetings, someone that goes here once in a while said, be yourself, do your best, you're perfect for the part. And I'm alcoholic, and I'm alive. And I always say, what more do they expect from me? Yeah. I'm from San Diego, product of Oak Park, Horace Mann, and Crawford. So what more do you expect from me? The one thing about speaking too is when I'm sitting in my chair back there relaxing, I never think about the person suffering about to get up here, you know, until I've been that person about to get up and speak. But actually, I feel pretty good right now because I have put that work in. And also, I heard last night in that tape, you know, the reality is it's an honor for me to get up here and share what's happened to Guy, how AA's helped me and changed me. And, you know, I do have a story. And I haven't always been a promoter of positive things. So the fact that if I got asked to come up here and share how AA has changed my life for the better, I might as well get up here, you know? And it feels good, actually. Not yet, but hopefully sometime. My dad's alcoholic, and I grew up with my mom here in San Diego, my mom and my stepdad, and because I'm alcoholic, I love my dad way more than my mom growing up, and I used to visit him, and I thought he was so great. He used to give me cash, let me cuss, let me drive the truck, I'd crawl out that back window of the truck, listen to classic rock, grab my Budweiser out of the cooler, look for cops and hand it to him, you know, and then my dad had a cup holder screwed right on the dash, this little like steel one with these little steel rings, and he just left the can right there, it would just swing back and forth right there on the dash, and that's, he drank and drove ever since I've known him and still today, you know, and so when I was about, I had drank with him before, but the first time I said, I want to get drunk for real, me, him, and his cousin. I was visiting up there. We got a bottle of Hot Damn. And that was the other thing. We'd be driving down the street in the old Ford truck, listen to classic rock. He'd give me a bottle of Hot Damn, say, drink it, boy. And then he'd teach me how to say, scream, Hot Damn, like that. Like that. I felt like an adult, you know, I felt good. And then I'd go home, and my mom would have the rules, you know, and it was a little bit strict, and it just didn't go over very well. I'm pretty damn oppositional defiant, and that's to put it nicely. And so we drank that night. We got about a Hot Damn root beer schnapps, peach schnapps, and passed them around. I was just drinking them, and it wasn't like the best experience I ever had. Actually, I started spinning around, don't remember much, and then they said I was vacuuming up puke in the middle of the night. I started throwing up everywhere, and but then I was up there another summer, right around like 13 or so, and I had gotten drunk by then a fair amount, but I was up there working for the summer with them at the construction site, and they drank on the job, and it was just like my dad, it was like the old school construction guy, and it was fun, you know, I drank and smoked weed with them. All I wanted to do was sit on the couch, listen to classic rock, and he'd tell me stories about the 60s, about the muscle cars, Chevelles, Camaros, and I'd sit there and puff weed and drink with my dad. I was like, it was the best time of my life up to that point. I loved that. It was family. I finally just felt like, this is my dad right here, the person I looked up to. You know, I had that warm feeling in my chest, and that was what I loved. Then I came back down to San Diego, and they started talking about futures and work. I said, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? And it just didn't, you know, I said, I want to live now. I want to have a good time right now. And And that was back in the early 90s, too. I mean, I was a minority in high school, rioted during Rodney King, got escorted off campus. You know, we'd walk off, and I grew up walking up and down Elkhorn Boulevard. And so I go over there to liquor stores, homeless and hookers, get bottles of Nitrane, MD, Old English, King Cobra, and guzzle them in the alley. And then I wasn't so scared like I was when I used to walk down there getting the jackets snatched off my back and the bikes taken out from under my hands. Drink a little Nitrane next, you know, I'm the one chasing that person down the street and cars and all that, you know? And it felt good screaming and being on top of the world for a second. And by then I already got arrested at school for marijuana, so I couldn't smoke. Right, and I had been in my and I was in my first diversion program, sitting there in a circle of people talking about drug problems and alcohol problems, and through Kaiser. And I remember just it was the most irritating, annoying, just anger. I had a serious anger problem, dude. It came up about 15, and just stayed that way. I used to say it went away, but. Or I don't even know, you know, I'm not as angry as I used to be, but I was extremely mad from about 15 to 25, and I went to some of the meetings, too. They took me to a couple meetings. We'd sit there in a circle, and I'd listen to people talk about, me and my dad and my friends drank alcohol and did drugs, and those were my best friends. Now I'm coming to a meeting with strangers talking about they don't want to drink and disrespecting the thing I love more than anything on the planet. I get angry. You know, and it was the most uncomfortable, I hated meetings. And then I moved up, and I told my mom, it's either me and my dad against you and the stepdad in court, or you're going to let me go. So I moved out to Northern California when I was 15, riding home from the airport, laughing about how messed up my mom was, smoking a joint with my dad, you know. And the English professor down there at City College, you know. And, but I felt better. That was like freedom right then. I got home. My dad's like, you got one job to take care of these plants in the backyard. It's up in Northern California. And way out in the middle of the woods, you know? If you know the word Georgetown, then you know where I was at. I worked my way up there all the way to upcountry by the time I was done. But started in Coloma and Lotus, which is where the gold was discovered up there. And got expelled from high school pretty quickly. And then I went to continuation school, and when I first got up there, I didn't, like, expand out and make a ton of friends either. It was that same thing. I sat there with my dad, drank and smoked weed, and just laughed and had a good time. And then I started making some friends up there and got in trouble, and then went to continuation school and got expelled from being a bad influence on the rest of the students. And 2 days before I turned 17, I was sitting there in front of a liquor store, and I called my stepmom for a ride, and she said, I'll come pick you up if I feel sorry for you. And I was with my buddy, and he said, let's break in this place. And he was joking, I acted like I was going to punch the door, and I said, forget it, and smashed the door, ran. And I laughed from the time I shattered the front door, went in there and tried to get as much stuff. There wasn't anything in there really, and I didn't plan it, but I ran with the two trash bags, or brown paper bags, for a half mile laughing back to this house we used to stay at, where my stepsister was living. The door was closed. I kicked the door, knocked it completely off the frame, into the living room, dropped the stuff in the living room. Everybody came up. They was asleep because it was about midnight. They start laughing, too, because that's how we are. Pretty funny, actually. A lunatic coming in there with his hand bleeding, you know, and a wife beater talking about how he just did this or that. And then all of a sudden, my stepsister starts laughing, too, and starts having an asthma attack. And she's gasping for air, so we threw her in the back of this 77 Cadillac and drove the 20 minutes to the hospital. And I said my first prayer, I'm right in there, I said, God, take me instead of her. And we got there, I'm yelling at the nurses and everybody, and the next thing you know, the five sheriffs pulled up, smashed my face in the back windshield of the cop car, chipped my two teeth in half, sent me in there, and I spent from 17 to 18 in juvenile facilities. And went to a boot camp, too. Once they transferred me down here to San Diego, because my dad was an unfit parent, they sent me out to a desert boot camp. So I was out there. All of a sudden, I got off the plane in Utah, St. George, Utah, 69 days, no shower. It's supposed to be a 30-day program where you're hiking around the middle of the desert. It took me 69 days. The one highlight out there, and I think about it every once in a while, and it's kind of sad because I'll never see this person again, is there was a dude out there. I don't know why we would. And as soon as they took your shoes away at night, you're laying there in a sleeping bag in the middle of the damn desert, looking up. And we used to start screaming Satan and all this stuff whenever, as soon as no one knew who it was. They knew who it was, you know? And then they'd make us hike all day. I think about this now when I'm hiking Cowles Mountain with 10 years of sobriety. We used to hike. Oh, I wonder how long that hike was I did that day. But anyway, he's like, oh, I got a hit of acid. And I was like, what? He's like, I snuck a hit of acid into the chapstick container. I see you're joking. And then all of a sudden, he pulled the cap off, and sure enough, it was there. Ripped it in half. We each took one half, and we're going on our hike. And the next thing you know, they say we're splitting up the group. And we're taking this guy somewhere else and taking me somewhere else. And I hike this long hike. And then that night, they're like in front of the campfire. And the dude's like giving a big talk. And it was just like total insanity, you know. And I got out of there. And my best friend up in Northern California had committed suicide. That was the first thing I heard when I got out of that program. And because his brother was the one I broke in the liquor store with. And then they were twin brothers, and so then they sent me to the next program, and I tortured those people. They were talking about don't do drugs, and you know, I was just like a lunatic in those programs. And then all I wanted to do is get out and drink with my dad and smoke bud and relax, you know, leave me alone. And I did, and when I was 18, I got out. I'd actually ran from one, and I got away for like 2 days or whatever, and but I got out when I was 18. I came back to Northern California. My stepmom picked me up. Now I guess she showed up to pick me up, looking back. And showed up in a Ford Escort, sitting there. I was screaming in the airport like a lunatic. And had a joint rolled for me. We stopped at the liquor store, got a Mickey's 40, drank half of it. And I smoked the joint. I started spinning. I was like, pull over right quick. They pulled over. I puked. I hadn't drank in a while. You know what I mean? And I was a natural drinker and drug user and criminal. So I just popped my shirt up like this, puked right in my shirt, caught it all, popped the back seat open. They opened the door, I popped it out, ripped my shirt off, threw it on the ground, said, I'm home now, partner. Let's get this thing started, you know? those are the good times, you know? These are the good times. And I got home. I remember that was the first time, because we're sitting there in the trailers way back in the woods, and I have all my friends there, and then all of a sudden I'm sitting there down in like a 98-cent High Life 32, and I just would think, damn, I wish I was still in that place that I was in. It was the first time I literally just thought while I was sitting there with my friends trying to have a good time. And that was like when they talk about you start thinking when you're drinking or whatever. And my stepmom's like, I got someone I want you to meet after I'd ruined half the place we were living in. And she's all, oh, it's my friend from the bar. She's 33. Her old man's in prison. She's a fucking crank addict, you know? And we all were anyway, you know? But she's all, you'll like her. She came over. Next thing you know, I had damaged the place until we lost all the electricity. We moved into the car together, living on the backwoods out there in the middle of nowhere. And we stayed up. I stayed up for about a year and a half. And well, what happened is when I'm thinking there in those trailers with my buddies, I didn't think anymore. As soon as I was tweaking, you know, I stopped thinking. And I'm not scared of Blair Witch Project. You know what I mean? I was at first, because we were out there on the fire roads, literally out, you drive out. I used to wear creased up Dickies and white t-shirts. And at first, it took a little bit of an adjustment when I got to the woods. You know what I mean? All that red dirt was getting everywhere. But I did adjust. And then by this time, I went totally out there. We'd be out driving out in those way out in the middle of nowhere all night, cooking on a Coleman stove, you know. And it was a normal thing just to be way back out in the middle of the woods, totally insane. And I was I traded a stolen TV and a VCR and $250 and got this Ford truck. And it's a general way, you know, that's what they say. I'm peeling out of a parking lot in my truck now. Fishtailed out, the battery hit the fan. I didn't know what happened. The engine starts squealing. I drive up to the local airport where I used to take showers and pop the hood, and the battery had hit the fan and exploded. And so I come back a couple of days later just to pour some baking soda on, like a good citizen, and clean it off. And a sheriff pulls up, had a loaded shotgun in the car, marijuana for sale, possession of meth, and went back to jail again to the felony, and I got bailed out, and I spent the next 4 months just raising hell. And I was up the whole time, totally insane, just out there in the woods, burglarizing everything. And I was 128 pounds when I went in that time. Sunburned from sitting there out, sparked in the middle of the night, going through stolen goods on some dirt road, and didn't realize the sun had been beating on my back for 12 hours straight, you know? And though it was a good time, though, some of it. I got used to hallucinating. I don't know. Basically, like, I said to myself, if they don't touch me, they're not there. Let's put it that way. You know what I mean? Because cops aren't going to roll around in the bushes with mag lights for 3 hours without making contact with me. So I came to the realization they're not there. You know what I mean? I watched Scarface when I was a kid and said, oh, maybe I'll be like Tony Montana. You know, and when I was broke, homeless, living in trailers or in the back streets of those woods, felony as a minor and as an adult, always in consequence, picking up cigarette butts off the ground, miserable as hell and totally insane, not mafia affiliated with no lawyer, I thought to myself, you know, maybe I'm not going to be like Scarface, you know? But I won't go into the total insanity on that one, but I moved back to San Diego. I was sitting because I wanted a muscle car too, and it was a part of my story. You know, I always wanted a muscle car, and when I was 16, I moved down to San Diego and worked for a summer and made like $1,500 and gave it to my dad, and that's why he bailed me out because he spent it when I was in that juvenile facility. And then so I was sitting in county again after I violated. And I was working at McDonald's because I got out. I was on felony probation. I couldn't do anything. I was sitting in a test all the time. And then I couldn't get a job because I had my head shaved down to the skin. I had a bad attitude. And I ended up working at I got a job because someone was working at McDonald's that I knew and would work there the cleanup. I'd work till 12 at night. And I'm down there trying to do the best I can in an apartment with one of my buddies. And I got off at like midnight and drank. And I was sitting down there with my pit bull on a chain in front of I forget what it was, like Caro's or some Coco's or something. I see two cops walk out. I say, you know what? They just ate. One of them, you know, they just ate. They should just go to their cars and leave me alone, you know. And he came up, and one of them walked over and said, I want to run your name to make sure the streets are safe. And they weren't. You know, I had a warrant, went back. And when I was 20, I came back down. Somebody was telling me about this 69 Chevelle he had. I said, I'm going back to San Diego. I'm going to try to do something different. So I came back down here. Actually, I came back down here in 98, and my uncle right here, Tom, took me over to North Park Men's out of the blue. I was in a state where if you had handed me a 40, I would have drank it. If you would have took me to a meeting, I would have went. We went over to North Park, sat there, and I remember they make you share over there when you're new. And afterwards, Bill came up to me and said, do you want to go to a meeting tomorrow night? And I was thinking, hell no, and I said, yeah. And that was the first time I'd say yeah to something like an AA. And he showed up every day for 4 months and took me to meetings. And North Park Men's, La Jolla Speakers, Old Town. There is a solution group on Monday, Tuesday, Escondido Speakers. Wednesday, the Pacific Group. Thursday, Carlsbad Workshop. And Friday, I'd take the bus from 48th down to wherever on and go to that North Park Men's. And I learned how to work. I got a job. I was sitting there in those speaker meetings. I had commitments. I'd help clean up the cups. I'd show up early. I got a job at the pet hospital. And I got 19 months sober. And I learned a lot. You know, that was actually when I had those experiences where I'd go to La Jolla Speakers. And I'd go afterwards. He said, get an AA friend. So I met Travis over there. He's gone. And we go over, and afterwards, I go to La Jolla Speakers, we set up, do the whole thing, and then afterwards, we go over to the living room out there in La Jolla, and I sit there and look out over the cove with all those sparking lights after drinking my five-shot cappuccino and Shane's smoking Marlboro Reds, and listen to that speaker and say, what's in store for Guy? You know, what's going to happen for me? I had that hope, you know? I did have that hope that something may happen for Guy. I just heard all these great stories in the meeting. And so that all happened in my first sobriety. At 19 and a half months, I got a little self-will run riot. Bill actually moved up north, and I got Joe as a sponsor and then had a relationship, broke up. And I was with my dad trying to make some extra money on a side job, ended up snorting cocaine, relapsed, blew 19 and a half months, sitting there wondering if I should. And then all of a sudden he told me, actually, I was up there working, and he told me a story about an electrician who showed up with a white ring around his nose, and it clicked something in my brain, and said, I'm going to do it one more time. And then he happened to have some. Next thing I know, I was looking in a mirror, I licked a vial, made a weird face to myself, and said, you ain't got no sobriety anymore. But then I was just instantly miserable. And for three weeks, I was relapsed, ended up coming back, and I was still pretty angry back then. In my second sobriety, I was still pissed off for that 26 months. And at 2 years, I took a token at 33rd and Mead, looking out at the people that I had commitments with and known for a long time, saying, I got all the freedom in the world. I can do whatever I want. You know, and 2 months later, when I was sitting there with my 16-year-old or my boss's 16-year-old daughter out there, took her out to her mom's in Lakeside, or some dude who just got out of prison for 19 months, and I had a Budweiser in my hand saying, F those people in AA, you know? And next thing you know, I couldn't get sober that time. And then I can't drink because I go straight to misery. Tweaking, I already burned it out, that part of my brain, so I go totally insane, get paranoid. So I called up one of my buddies that I knew was relapsed. It was doing heroin, so that's what I started doing, to not think about the meetings, you know? And I was coming in and out for a while. And then I wanted to live, though. That's the reality. I've been in AA enough to know that I want to live. I've been in that place where I didn't want to live. But in AA, I had that hope, so I did want to live. And I came back in. I was struggling, and I ended up overdosing. And I had 3 weeks of sobriety, hit 21 meetings in a row. It's a Sunday morning. I'm sitting there. And Josh calls me up saying, let me have a ride to Southeast. And then we go till 9:50 or 8:55. All right. We're about done with this drinking. I literally threw the phone against the wall. It shattered. And I'm putting it back together, and I can hear him on the answering machine saying, just give me a ride. And I put the phone back together, and he's still calling over and over again. I'm no victim. I'm an idiot. You know, I answered and said, okay, I'll give you a ride. Went down there. We're sitting in the back of the Nova, actually, and this dude we picked up down in Southeast, and he had his eyes all swollen. I'm going to detox on Monday. And I said, are you going to stay sober? He said, F no, homie, I'm a dope fiend. And it just clicked that little thing in my brain again. I said, you know, I'm going to do it one more time. And the next thing I know, I woke up in the parking lot, in my boxers, looking up with tubes in my throat, a crowd of paramedics and fire department pulling this tube out saying, you're going to be able to breathe again. And they pulled me on my side. I couldn't move for 3.5 hours. And my buddies were taking me down from the fourth floor in my boxers after they put me in the bathtub, throwing ice on me, busted my head, trying to get into my 72 Nova that you had to open the trunk to start the battery because they wouldn't have been able to figure it out, as the bottom line. And some random stranger said, hey, you think we should call 911? And that's the only reason why I'm alive. And because there's a God. But, give credit where credit's due, you know? It ain't about me. You know, it ain't about what I've achieved in AA. It's about how I'm doing right now. And how I'm doing is okay because of the work I did recently, because those steps I took, because I tried to be in a place where I can transmit something I have got for a second and feel better while I'm up here. And it'll be your turn next. That's the bottom line. I'll be sitting back there supporting you, though, because I need to hear what you got to say if I want to stay sober and I want to stay alive. I like hearing what you have to say. Actually, it's the only place I really feel good. You know, it's the place where I laugh. I'm not a halfway alcoholic. I didn't drink half a 40 and say, let me stop right now. I wanted 100% of the effect. That's why I huffed spray cans if I couldn't get anything else, until I had brain damage and didn't know what was going on. And then I sat there with my head throbbing in a recovery home after someone told me I could huff Glade. And then finally, when my brain stopped feeling like it was going to push in on itself, and I thought I wasn't going to die, I got back up and went over there to the sock drawer, pulled it out, and hit that thing again, you know? You know how we do it. It's nothing new here, you know? But the thing was, they put me in that ambulance, and I thought to myself, what's my name, to see if I had brain damage? And I also thought about one of these, because I was in school at this point, too, because I'd gone back to school in sobriety. I didn't plan a relapse. I slipped up because I was self-unright and totally insane. And, you know, I said to myself one too many times, man, I'm so crazy right now, I could relapse. You know what I mean? And then I look back and I'm like, yeah, I was crazy enough to relapse. And And no, I can't see it. All right, it's only been 2 minutes. Good. And then I went down there in Hillcrest with the doctors screaming at me because, you know, your lungs are filled up with fluid. And finally, I after about 3 hours, I realized I started to be able to walk again. So I got up, ripped all the IVs out, and I was walking around there. And that, I did feel a little bit of that pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization when I had that little gown on with my ass showing with all these families down there thinking about, I don't even know where I am, to be honest. And it's funny, though, because I saw Steve. That's where I saw Steve that night. I finally got my buddy to come pick me up in the Nova. We're driving down Washington at that little liquor store, Fiori's or whatever it is. We stopped for a second. And I looked over, and Steve's there in his Fairlane. And I said, I'm going to be there on Wednesday, because that was the meeting I went to every week. I was just there the Wednesday before. And then, in this sobriety, me and Steve have become friends. Yeah. But and then I relapsed one more time after that. After I was sober again for 3 weeks or so, and I slipped up one more time, and I came back, and I was like, this time when it said when I seen step two, because I questioned myself so much about what I did wrong. You know, I drank because I'm an alcoholic. That's what I realized. I don't want to figure it out anymore. I figured out enough in my last two sobrieties. I don't want to be miserable either. That's the bottom line. I want to be happy. I'm not happy easily. It takes a lot for God to be happy in AA. And I didn't know if I want to do it. What's the point? Am I going to get 10 months and slip up again? I was sitting there with Joe, and Joe didn't know what to do with me. He said, you're going to go to 90 meetings in 90 days. And he said, I'm going to go with you. And he did. I showed up at his house every day for 90 days. We went to meetings. We're down at the Southeast Solano Club on Friday nights and or wherever, just hitting different random meetings. And I heard a lot of good things. You know, I listened to those speaker tapes at night to just feel good, hear someone else talk about how they came to believe in a power greater than themselves. I didn't know about God, you know. We don't go into the God stories. I flushed a Bible down the toilet screaming Satan in juvenile hall, punching the door while having a service outside. Just because I hated everything, you know. And the thing is, I had no problems with God this last time in sobriety. Actually, when I seen step two, I said, I begged God to keep me sober. And I said, I'm going to try that a little harder this time. I'm going to try to come to believe like I did all those weightlifting or the muscle car or all the other stuff I gave so much effort in AA. I might as well give step two a shot. That's one thing I didn't do perfectly in my last sobrieties was do this God thing like it was the most important thing in my life. And that's what it came down to. You know, God didn't want Guy to not have that relationship with him. I had to die to live, like they say, surrender to win. And I came back here this time, and you know, the thing is, I was dedicated. It's like what Chuck C. says. I was listening to those tapes. The first 3 years, he was totally desperate and surrendered, willing to do anything. And he had total peace. And he just, like, was totally, everything was going. That's how I was. I was walking down the street downtown, like, seeing old people and following them into church and sitting there and watching them pray just because, you know, going to the meetings. When I do those steps, I latched on to that step 6 and 7. Joe used to always tell me to grab a dictionary and look up the words. I ain't using no dictionary. That ain't AA-approved literature, you know? I didn't know the definitions is a thing. I knew the definitions from the TV, you know? And I remember the first time I looked up humility, because that's one I hear about a lot, and it said a state of being humble, and then humble was a conscious awareness of one's own defects of character. And that was straight out of the dictionary. And for me, see, this time in sobriety, I had to get a little more friendly before I get sober. I had a bad attitude. Head shaved down to the skin, saying the F word every other word at the podium, wondering why everybody wasn't running up to me afterwards to offer me the solution. And wondering why I'm that person relapsing next time with my life on the line. I want to live. I've already had the consequences. I know what that's like to be a total insane and ruin my life, but I don't know what it's like to achieve those things in AA that they talked about. And you know, and I wanted to have a piece. I wanted to have that part of life. I wanted to have that good life. And so I did. I grew my hair out. I started smiling, started reaching out and shaking people's hands. And then I realized I'm not pushing away the people in the meetings, which is how I get my God anyway. And I had that better. I felt better. And then I stopped relapsing too. And then all of a sudden, you know, it went on. I mean, I want 100% of that effect. Then I need to drop Guy's way, which is being angry and insane, and start letting God get to me through all the people in the room so I can get the maximum. And they talk about maximum service too. Being a maximum service. I wanted this. I wanted to be happy, joyous, and free. Like I said, why do I got to be with my veins popping out, screaming, going down the freeway, totally insane all the time while my sponsor's happy. God, figure that one out for me. You know, and God answered, I don't have to be that way. And I started smiling a little bit more and feeling better. You know, that's the thing. My defects of character are what keep me miserable, period. I took a beating into a state of reasonableness, like it says in the big book, to the point where I don't want to be mean anymore. I can be vulnerable because I want all that joy. I've been there. I want as much happiness as I possibly can have. And it's come back, you know, don't get me wrong. So it did get better, and one thing is I used to like I said, I was a drywaller. I got into construction because and one of my buddies from AA is like, hey, come work with me on drywall. So I went down there, and I thought it was gonna be like when I worked with my dad on the job site, sitting there joking, and it was commercial drywall, and he's like yelling at me day one, Bill, are you in here? He comes here once in a while. And but the thing about drywall for me, when you're lugging them those 12-foot 5/8 sheets all day long, and you got a temper like me, and I'm slapping myself in the face to stay awake when I'm driving home from Miramar eating an apple so I don't get in a car accident, it wipes out a little bit of that anger, you know? And it was good for me. And then I told my boss, I said, because I tried going back to community college once. I got a D on the first quiz and quit. And then I went, and I was sitting there, we're putting a drywall scrap in a dumpster, me and this dude from L.A., and he said, I'm just down here for the summer. I'm going to medical school up there at UCLA. I said, and just all of a sudden I had a little pain in my chest. I was like, man, I can do more. So I went back to City College and rolled in personal growth, where you roll the dice to find out if you're male or female, roll the dice to find out if you had a math major, roll the dice to find out if you graduated college, what you're, you know, where, and whatever. My mom suggested I take that class, and it's like a motivator, teaches you some study habits. But this thing's coming off now. Forget it. Jack Brennan, man, if you haven't heard him, put that tape on, you know? So I was down there at community college for a while, you know, and 4.5 years later, I transferred from San Diego City College to UCSD, and then it wasn't a cakewalk. I had some hard times at City College, you know, having to start in Algebra 1 and go all the way to Calculus 3, because I am good at math, so that's what I ended up going in that direction. And I remember I was down there thinking it had to be a certain way. And I busted my ass asking questions to this professor and doing everything I possibly could. And I was supposed to get a B in this class because it was the most important thing in the world to Guy to get this B. And all of a sudden I got my grade and it says a C. Walked out there. I said, I thought I was going to get a B. I just picked up myself, walked outside the class, started smashing the thing on the top of the trash can, screaming the F word in the middle of finals right there. And then walked over to the courtyard and screamed out, I'd rather spend the rest of my life in prison in this hellhole, and threw the thing, and everybody's scattering. And then I went over to the new library at City College, and I'm looking out the window because I still had to finish an assignment. And I cracked open my bag, and I grabbed that little miniature big book out of there, and I read page 84 to 88. And when I started talking about selfishness and self-centeredness, I laughed to myself, you know, and said, who cares, to be honest? I died. I got a chance to do this. You know, I don't give a damn about a class. It's like Chuck C said. He looked out there, a bunch of young people asking him how to become successful. He said, you know what? I'm a failure. That's how you become successful. I've already failed. I got nothing to lose, you know? I developed a God in AA this time, too, who's happy with me. If I'm in a meeting trying to do the best I can, reach out and smile, I'm a success today. I can get a speeding ticket, cuss at my mom, my girlfriend, fail the test, ruin everything in my life, and I'm sitting back there in that meeting, God's looking down saying, God, you did a good job today. I need a higher power like that. I believe I developed that from listening to Chuck C. My God doesn't compare me to a mountain and a molehill. When Guy asks a stupid prayer walking down the street because I'm upset, he looks at that just as important as someone dying on their deathbed in cancer. I need God to pay attention to Guy, otherwise I'm going to be gone. And so I did. I transferred to UCSD after that 4.5 years in structural engineering major, graduated in 2008. I'm a structural engineer, advanced drywaller, you know? And it's funny, though. It's funny because when I was 17, I was escorted through the airport in a white beater handcuff. They covered up my handcuffs, head shaved down to the skin, through the thing. Cops escorted me when I got off the plane, through the airport, down the escalator to the Crown Victoria, waiting out front in juvenile hall. And now, all of a sudden, I'm sitting there in my internship. Because I got one internship for my buddy from, this is how AA works for Guy. My buddy from my home group, Mike, or Sean, he was an engineer too. He did the same route as me. He was a construction insane person, damn near killed someone in a DUI, got sober, went to community college, went to San Diego State, got a master's, got a family, became an engineer. He's sitting there on Monday night, and I'm asking, what do I do next? What do I do next? Well, let me take you down there and introduce you to some of my buddies. You know, so he got me my first intern. And through some of his buddies. And I'm working there, and all of a sudden, it's 2008, and I'm applying for that master's. Oh, should I do this or not? You know, I don't really want to do any more school. I'm sick of this. Next thing you know, I don't get approved for the master's, and then I'm going to work that day and tell my boss. He's like, oh, by the way, we don't know if we have any work for you coming up here in 2 months when you graduate. All of a sudden, that devastation hit me in my chest. I go home. My world's caving in on Guy. And I call him up again. He says, okay, well, let me talk to someone else. And so he calls up someone else who happened to work at a bigger company who had someone going out on pregnancy leave. We call these coincidences in AA. Having me going out on pregnancy leave. And next thing you know, I'm in a meeting at the airport because we're designing all the expansions down there at the airport buildings. And then they talk about, you need to get security clearance. A Homeland Security clearance. I'm thinking robbery by assault, commercial burglary, and possession of narcotics while carrying a loaded firearm. Good luck. But I actually didn't say anything. I just didn't say a damn thing at all, you know? And then I started sweating, actually. But then it's an everyday thing. Like Jack Brennan said, that's my favorite line, the impossible in AA just takes a little bit longer. You know, I got a couple letters, long story short, from professors saying, oh, I'd work with this guy. Oh, he's all right. You know, the next thing I know, I sent it up there. I got a lawyer for $1,500. They went up there, and they couldn't drop it, but they changed it to not guilty. So I got that 1204 or whatever, and then I went down there a couple years later, because it was a couple years, actually, before I needed the security clearance anyway. And then I got my security badge. I can walk up there, slap the side of an airplane, and it's... The other thing is... You know, the funny thing is, too, though, is that guy was also, I'm sitting there in class, and they're like, oh, we're going on a field trip to go look at this job site for this structural engineering company in town. It's so-and-so, and it's my boss. And I know this guy's on the board for the master's approval. So I was like, all right. I went up to afterwards. I said, that's my boss. He wants me to do that master's. Got a letter. Next thing you know, we're in the next class is with the person who's on the head of that board. I go up to him and say, and we have a guest speaker. Oh, it's my boss. So I went, you know what I mean? So I told him, hey, tell him I want to do this. We wrote a letter. You know, my GPA was high enough for engineering, so they got me in there, reversed it. And the thing was, when they denied me for the master's, all of a sudden I wanted to do it, of course. You know what I mean? Because I want to learn as much as I can. I want my shot here. I don't want to miss out on an opportunity that AA and God promised me from all those damn big shot speakers I heard in here talking about how good they got it. I want all that too for Guy. Where's my chance? You ain't going to take that away from me. I'll come down and bust your head. You know? How many people down here, they got hepatitis C, drug addict, felon, psychotic, crank, fucking loser, lunatics doing engineering at UCSD? Let me put that in my approval letter. You know? But, so I got approved, and then I'm up at 5 in the morning doing homework. Yay! You know? And, that was the funny thing. So, year 9, I got 9 years of sobriety. You know, I got the master's, I got a house. I got married, an AA girl here, had a kid. She's 2, big dog Sky, dropped her off there in OB before I came over here. And, I'm over it. You don't laugh when you're doing calculations, especially when you think the building's falling down. I'm sitting there at work stressing about I got so much responsibility. When I was in 90 days, they didn't say, Guy, the solution for you, an unfunctioning alcoholic is totally insane and likes to be happy all the time, is a ton of responsibility, a stressful-ass job, a house payment, no free time, you know, and all this stuff. That's the key to happiness. No, they said happiness is God reaching out, doing your commitments, and you know what I mean, and being yourself and being in these meetings. And so then I was like, I hate my job. And I complained my whole ninth year and couldn't figure it out. I'm listening to Power of Now, trying to figure it out in my head. You know, what's wrong with Guy? Why am I unhappy? Why am I sitting here complaining when I sit in a meeting? I show up and all I can think about is how bad I got it. I can't connect to anybody in the meetings. I don't care what you got to say. I'm too stressed out. I feel like someone took a brain like a sponge and turned it like this. I can't even see straight. I'm still trying to figure out from my stress from the day. You know, there's my dreams. And I complained about it to everybody every day. It was pathetic. And the funny part is, though, I couldn't figure it out. And what do? Joe, we had that step study with Jesse, went over there and went through the steps again, doing that Dr. Paul book, which is basically straight out of the big book, asking you a couple questions here and there. And I went through the steps again, and all of a sudden, all my problems went away. There's no answer for it. I can't tell you how. I don't look at the airport authority, which I had on that list, and say, oh, I know exactly why I'm okay with this now. No, I went through the steps, and I don't have any problems anymore. Just like I did the first time. You ask someone who's 6 months here, the first day and time they go through the steps, they're not drinking anymore. If you say, you know, why aren't you drinking anymore? Oh, they're not going to explain to you how they went through the steps and give you a detailed answer how it works. I don't know how the hell it works. The reality is, I'm the problem. When I feel bad, I'm the problem. And how much time is there? Okay. Yeah, so it was a hell of an awakening, though, because I was happy again. All of a sudden, my job wasn't so bad. You know what I mean? All of a sudden, I do whatever. It makes me feel good, too. And I love challenges. I just dropped 20 pounds. Sitting on my desk with soft hands, not touching any construction site with a pencil. I came soft, my back sore, I'm out of shape. And I got these young bucks that I got jobs at my work wanting to bike and run the lake. So now I'm running with them at the lake. You know, running five. I couldn't even run a mile, you know. And now I ran 7. So, and we're running 5 miles 3 times a week just because it feels good. I want to feel good. Exercise is part of it. It's the whole package. Like Chuck C says, spirituality at family, at work, and in AA. I got to do all three. I had to join Al-Anon. I was there this morning with my sponsor talking about communication so I can keep this marriage rolling. I don't know how to communicate. What's the problem? I don't want to talk about it. You know what I mean? But, and you know, I thought, I do want to talk about it. I thought, you know, forget that. Things are going good now is the bottom line. And it was funny because about 4 months after doing those steps, it started coming back a little bit again. You know, and the other thing is, though, after I did the steps, then all of a sudden I looked around and said, man, maybe I can start caring about somebody else in these meetings again besides myself. You know, maybe I start caring about that person that's sitting next to me for a second. That's a blessing. I used to think that Mira Mesa Lawn Club was stupid and weird. It's near my work. And I go there now and feel great afterwards. You know, I made friends there. You know, I'm an alcoholic. I'm being myself and I'm doing my best. And it feels good. I don't have any choice. I'll drink again if I don't do the program or I'll be miserable. And I don't want to be miserable. I don't want my life to roll through. It just rolls by like a whirlwind. I'm so busy. I got so much things going on. Next thing you know, I can't even be happy. What's the point? You know, so true happiness, like Joe said, I can't look, oh, when I get this, that's when I'll be happy. I gotta be happy every day if I can. When I'm in school, I can't look, oh, 5 years from now when I get a career is more stressful than I anticipated, I'm going to be happy. No, I got to do what I got to today. I got to hit the meetings. I got to reach out. I got to do everything I possibly can to be happy. I got to go through those steps because I have a hard time praying in the morning. I get up and just run, and I'm gone. And I'm sick of that whirlwind, you know, and it happens at work. I kept telling people how bad I got it. I was just stuck on stupid. And now I just realized, you know, I got it good. Man, I've been around here for a while. You know, it's no mystery. My life is really damn good. And if I sit here and tell anybody otherwise, they need to slap my ass, you know. But it still comes back. I'm alcoholic. Unless I'm doing these steps, all of a sudden I start getting resentful at work. And they start talking about, this guy's been getting vocal and cussing lately, you know, in the meetings. And then I got to look at that inventory again. I write that down. I learn something new about Guy. Oh, I'm gossiping at work. And then I can practice it. I can practice not talking bad about people and my coworkers, how I know everything, you know. Because I want to be happy. It ain't about anybody else. So thanks for having me up here. I ain't got anything else to say.